You're listening to Inside Ella Vista on 91.9 FM KCSB. I'm Hector Sanchez Castaneda. Tonight, we are talking about the public town hall meeting on public safety that happened last week. And we'll talk to the Recreation and Parks District on how they plan on using the new bedroom tax income that passed last month. Later in the show, the Ivy Food Co-op General Manager, Melissa Cohen, joins us to talk about how the food co-op has gone solar. But first, Jay Freeman, Community Services District Board Member, is here to talk about the Public Safety Town Hall meeting held last week. Thanks for talking with me today, Jay.
Oh, absolutely.
So, for someone unable to attend, how would you describe the general feel of the town hall? How did the community respond? What were the major concerns?
So, there was a variety of low-level issues that people had, whether it be looking at sexual violence or hate crimes. Some cases, something as simple as wanting to feel safe walking somewhere, or to be able to get better information from the police about current laws that are in the area. But there was actually kind of an overarching high-level concern that came down to transparency. This was something that could be seen in trying to get information on the status of a sexual assault case, or trying to make certain that when a hate crime occurs, that people are notified in a timely manner so that they know if their community is being targeted, that maybe they should be figuring out something to do about that. Like they should be taking precautions. Which is, a horrible thing you have to, of course, to say to them, but it's that's the feeling, right? Is that, if there's somebody out there who's specifically targeting you, you want to know. That's something that, we actually had in the audience, Ruben Cintron, the lieutenant from the Isla Vista Foot Patrol, as well as, and I actually don't remember their names, but two people from the university's police department.
In terms of transparency, are you referring to the quickness of the alerts that the sheriffs or the UCPD give?
Yeah, it's a whole host of things that all kind of come down to communication and ability to get access to information. So one of them is quickness of alerts. There was somebody brought up that there had been a stabbing in Isla Vista a few days before, and that there had been no alert for the stabbing that had occurred. But sometimes you hear alerts of burglaries that are occurring. And so it's like, why are we hearing a lot of information about certain things and not really any information about other things that seem just as, if not possibly more important for us to hear about? Some of these issues about hate crimes that are coming up, because there was a hate crime that occurred in one of the parks in Isla Vista, then there was an Isla Vista resident involved in a hate crime downtown, and I believe that then there was another hate crime more recently that occurred in Isla Vista. The only reason why we heard about it from the police department is that somebody who works for the park district noticed, why are there police officers scouting around the park? And brought it to one of the staff members at the park district, who then brought it to the foot patrol and essentially just pounded on them, saying, "What happened in our park? What happened in our park? You have to tell us what happened in our park." And at the public Isla Vista Community Network meeting, Ruben Cintron brought a report on what had happened. And then Ethan Bertrand, who's on the board of the Isla Vista Community Services District, who is a member of the community that was being targeted, was just aghast at the idea that he only even heard about this because of a random, thankful sequence of events of people seeing the police officers doing that investigation. Mm-hmm. And so he then took that to a number of news organizations, he interviewed on one of the television news stations in the area about the incident. And so it's just kind of like, why are we not always hearing about the things that we need to hear about?
How does a relationship between the CSD and the sheriffs and UC Police Department work? What do you do?
So one thing I should clarify is that I am speaking as a board member,
right,
and as somebody who was at the meeting. I'm not speaking officially on behalf of the Community Services District. So when you ask me a question like that, I just want to make it very clear that I'm explaining these things, but I'm not an official I'm not officially representing the district right now.
Okay.
So the Isla Vista Community Services District has a power, which is to contract for additional police protection services. But the power that we have is something that we are still working on. Like, well, what would we contract for? And we do not have any formal relationship with any of these other bodies. In the future, we might have a contract with them. That's something that, I mean, it's one of my top priorities for what the district can do. And it has been stated at the meeting that it is that other board members consider to be their top priority. But again, I cannot speak as the board or for the board in saying that it is our priority.
The Santa Barbara County Sheriff's Office 2016 crime report showed 56 forcible rape reports, 23 of which occurred in Isla Vista. What role can the CSD take in reducing these numbers?
So there are a couple things, one of which is that so the university has pledged $200,000 a year for mutually agreed upon projects with the Isla Vista Community Services District. One of the ideas that came up during the initial conversation they had with Ethan, who is the board president, was to have a sexual assault detective contracted with UCPD and assigned to work specifically on cases in Isla Vista. And so that's something that could, if there's more attention, if there's somebody whose job it is to directly field complaints, maybe there people would be more willing and likely to complain, because currently when you go and you bring a complaint, sometimes you're just ignored. You are shuffled off. You are victim blamed. There's all sorts of problems that come up in that current channel. And so if you were to instead have a sexual assault detective actually looking into these cases, maybe that would reduce the incident. However, that is an after the fact measure. It can reduce if you make it clear that these things get looked into, that can help prevent. But other options are to look into ways of partnering with organizations to try to provide more preventative educational measures.
Do you, as a board member, support an increase in law enforcement, or like for example the another detective, or alternative policing like UCIV and the CSO department that operates under the UC Police Department?
So, and this is where I'm going to very much, yeah, and I'm glad you asked it that way, very much underscore again, this is my opinion on this. The UCIV program is something that I think is really great to have, but I also think that they're doing it. And we actually had a representative of UCIV show up to that town hall, and he was just on it. And talking about the way in which they're currently looking at expanding to cover general IV residents, and it's not just, it's like a theory, they've got an implementation strategy and they're doing it. They've got funding sources, and it's the kind of thing where it's like, well, if there are these other groups that are already working on solving some of these problems, maybe our resources would be better directed elsewhere. I always bring up there's this image you may have seen floating around the internet recently, which is about equity versus equality. Equality is where you treat everyone the same, and equity is where you make certain that the people who are at the greatest disadvantage can receive the most resources to get the most help. And when I asked the question of who is currently being most disenfranchised by our existing police system, the answer is not a lot of the things that come up from the expanded UCIV or CSO programs necessarily, because the number one use case for them is always go to a party and tell them that there is a noise violation occurring. It is people who are the victims of sexual assault. It is the people who are victims of hate crimes. It is the general systemic injustice that is occurring on them by the police force itself. And these are things that maybe we can use our resources to try to target and help. As far as what the specific mechanism by which we help is, I'm definitely open. And so I am very interested in hearing feedback from the people who are affected. And that was one of the big goals with this town hall, was to be able to hear from such parties.
Is there anything final that you would like to say to our listeners?
Only that our meetings are on the first and third Tuesdays of every month at 6 p.m. And if you would like to come and provide public comment on anything that we are doing or that you would like to see us do, we would very much love to hear it. 970 Embarcadero Del Mar behind Nonstop.
Thank you, Jay, for talking with me.
All right. Thank you so much.
You are listening to Inside Ella Vista on 91.9 FM KCSB. I'm Hector Sanchez Castañeda. I am now joined by Piquin Sutar, board chair of the Ivy Recreation and Parks District. So it's been nearly 1 month since a special election on May 9th. There was a special mail-in ballot to see if the community approved the $20.75 tax.
Per bedroom annually.
So now that it's been approved, what are the priorities in spending this money?
Well, on our agenda tomorrow evening is an item that will start the discussion, basically. We know we're going to be getting about $260,000 a year for 10 years. And we have many, many ideas that have been coming from the community over the years that we have written down and we are thinking about. But we want to reach out now. Now that we know we have the funding, we are going to try to do some outreach to the community over the next 3-4 months or so and just kind of finalize, you know, what are the priorities? What can we spend the money on? What makes sense in the long term? And then probably set up like a priority list and maybe a 3-year plan, a 5-year plan, and even a longer term plan so that we can really think about how the best, wisest way to use this for the community.
I know there was a conversation last year about the need for water. What are the state of the parks right now?
Well, we had such wonderful rain this year, but that doesn't mean that droughts are going to go away. I've lived here a long time. This is the third drought that I've been through. So even if we were to get 6 more years of glorious rain, I still want to have a more sustainable water source than using the drinking water from Goleta. So at this point, for me, that's a priority. Again, we need to reach out to the community. It's going to be a board decision, but this is something that we have been talking about the last year. We have money allocated in this year's budget to have an engineer look into this for us and help us through the different hurdles that it would take to make this happen. I mean, it's a fairly complicated endeavor because the deal would be made with Goleta Water District, but it's Goleta Sanitary District that processes that reclaimed water. And I just, before we invest, we got a ballpark figure of about $350,000 to get the purple pipe from El Colegio down into the center of our parks in the downtown area. And there's also grants out there, so we will pursue grants. But I want to make sure before we invest this large infrastructure that we're guaranteed that we're going to get this water. I'd love to be able to lock in a price. I know the university has been grandfathered in for a certain amount of water at a certain price. I don't know if we can manage something similar to that, but I would feel much better with such a big investment. Because one of the things that I know Goleta Water is talking about is doing secondary treatment on the reclaimed water and either putting it back into the aquifers or actually going from recycled to tap. I'm really concerned that if we are going to make this investment, that we're guaranteed that we're going to get, you know, recycled water at a discounted rate, you know, for perpetuity.
How was the campaign leading up to May 9th?
Uh-huh.
How was your experience campaigning in Isla Vista?
I like campaigning in Isla Vista. You know, it's nice to do park stuff because people do love their parks and they do appreciate their open spaces. So it's not a hard sell to be, you know, hey, we're blessed with 54 acres of parks. We've got some good things going on, but we can make some better things happen. What was challenging was that it was a special election. That was the challenging part, that there is nothing else on the ballot. No one's ever tried a mail-in ballot in Isla Vista before. You know, our biggest worry was that people would just see that and it would end up in the recycling bin. But it was fun. You know, I love doing creative campaigns. So we had a great team helping us and lots of art, lots of grassroots, you know, door-to-door, lots of stickers and posters. And, you know, it was fun.
So there are, according to election results, there are approximately 11,000 registered voters in Isla Vista.
Yes.
However, only approximately 500 came out and actually mailed in their ballot.
Yeah. By the end there, I think it was 620 something. But
620.
Yeah.
So that's around 6% turnout.
I know. It was disappointing considering how much time everybody put in going door to door and standing on the corners of Pardal and having a concert in the park and doing, you know, we did outreach to lots of different student organizations. So, you know, yes, it's disappointing in a way that more people didn't take an interest, but the percentage of people who did vote, 80%, you know, were supportive.
Right.
So,
do you think this reflects a bigger issue in Isla Vista politics about the possible disinterest from part of the students, or maybe the community members aren't able to get involved? What do you think?
I think that in my one-on-one with people were supportive of this. People liked the parks. I just think trying to get them to fill out that ballot and stick it in the mailbox for some reason was tricky. You know, do I consider it an apathy in Isla Vista? I mean, you didn't say that word, but I don't think so. If you look at major elections that happen out here, you'll have a very large percentage of Isla Vistans voting for president. You'll have a slightly smaller voting for county board of supervisor. And then you'll have a much smaller voting for, you know, local issues like park and rec, you know, sanitary district, water district, that kind of thing. So maybe it's a lack of knowledge about how the community is put together, you know, in a governmental way that's part of this. Again, a special election, we've had them before, and you don't get a lot of voter turnout.
Right. And now that Isla Vista has a new government, the community services district, I know that one of their big issues has been getting the community to be involved, right? So how has the Recreation and Parks District relationship with the CSD been these past few months? And how do you think it'll help with community outreach?
I think that we all get along really well. I have a lot of respect for the board members of the CSD, and I can't attend every meeting, but I have been able to attend a few. And I think the overlap between the two districts will fall in the area of the community center, but also just cooperating in whatever ways we can. I try to go there, and if there's a question I can answer, and I know they come to our meetings, and many of them were very supportive with Major O. And I had a lot of support from Spencer Brandt and Jay Freeman and Ethan Bertrand. So that I'm really appreciative of. And, you know, it's all, you know, for me, recreation and parks can help build community. Not so much on the governmental side of things, but on the recreation and social side of things. I think that's where our job lies, is just trying to figure out ways that neighbors know neighbors, that families know students, that long-term residents are familiar with other people in the neighborhood and what their needs are and vice versa. And I think that's where we can really do a lot to help. But again, their list of priorities is different than ours, but I do think we're going to be able to work together, and I do think we have been working together.
Great. You mentioned the community center. Last time I heard, that was still in the hands of the county.
Yes.
Has there been conversation of giving the ownership either to the CSD or the Recreation or Parks District?
It is owned by the county. Whether it's managed by the county in the future, I'm not sure, or whether it's possibly, you know, that's up to them. All I'm at is we would like to help if people would like our help. So at this point, you know, we have the keys to the community rooms. Mm-hmm. And when people need it, they go to our general manager, and he's got the schedule, and he hands people the keys. Very simple, just to make sure that the community has access to that room. But once the center's up and going, it's going to be up to our supervisors to figure out the best way to put that together. Me personally, I'd like to see kind of a board made up of different stakeholders and to kind of come up with directions and programmings. But again, you know, that's my personal feeling of what would be, you know, a cohesive, inclusive way to run it. But I'm also, the county's been doing such a great job of putting it together and letting there be access for the community. I'm happy however things work out, as long as the community gets the free access to those rooms that we've been getting already.
Is there anything you would like to add about the present and the future of the Recreation and Parks District?
I'm just really excited. We're going to get to do some great things, you know, whether it starts with recycled water or safety lighting, or I'd like to do some smaller things right off the bat so that the people that participated in this actually see a result of the funding and what the funding's going towards. And one of the most interesting things about this, I think, also is we're going to have a whole line item budget that's strictly this in our budget, that's strictly this funding. Mm. So we can see exactly how much comes in and we can see exactly how it's being spent. And the community can see exactly how it's being spent. We're not going to have it all mushed over into our regular operating budget. I really want people to understand, you know, here's our $260,000. Are we going to do adult playground equipment? Are we going to do more murals? Are we going to do safety lighting? You know, what's it going to be this year? Or what's it going to be in long-term goals for some of the bigger ticket items? So for me, that's exciting because people will really be able to understand exactly how their tax dollars are being spent on this. And another piece of this is temporary funding. So we have to be careful that what we create is sustainable. Mm. You know, if you build a bathroom somewhere, there's a lot of cost associated with upkeep of a bathroom. You know, if you do a big play structure in another park, you know, we have to think ahead as to how in the future we're going to be able to pay for things. Some things, it's a one-time dealio, you know, solar lighting somewhere, you know, some benches somewhere, you know, those types of things will not have long-term costs associated with it. But not that we're going to shy away from doing, you know, big ticket long-term things. We just really need to think about how to sustain them in the future.
All right, Pingin.
All right, terrific. Thank you so much, Hector.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
You're listening to Inside Ella Vista on 91.9 FM KCSB. I'm Hector Sanchez-Castañeda. With me now, Melissa Cohen, Ivy Food Co-op General Manager, and fourth-year Environmental Studies major, Kaylin Lamb. Melissa, are these the first solar panels that the food co-op has?
Yes, we've never had solar panels before.
How did the idea first come to be?
We were approached by the Revolve nonprofit as an opportunity to be a project for them. So they reached out to us. We were recommended through the channels of UCSB alumni, and because there's a university professor on campus that recommended to these students that they could connect to this nonprofit and try to help create a project, that's how we got picked and reached out to. It's a 25-kilowatt system. There's 100 panels on the roof, which is the biggest array that the roof could actually hold. Mm. And so the store at any time pulls about 15 kilowatts of power. So technically we're producing more than we're using, but obviously it's not always sunny. So we won't know probably until we run it for about a month or two. But like right now, you know, it's June gloom, so we're not producing any solar power. So obviously we're pulling in power, but we're not producing back out. So it kind of is going to be based on the weather and monitoring the system for its like a total amount of output over the course of a period of time. But we're expecting at least a third of our power and a 10% payment reduction in our utilities that we would use to pay towards the lease for the panels.
Are there plans on going completely solar? Do you have enough space?
No, we're maxed out. The roof holds as much, that's what I just said. So we have 100 panels on the roof. It's completely full, and that's how much we're able to accommodate on our building. As a grocery store, we use obviously more power than like a house would use. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty easy for a house to be completely offsetting their power needs. If you think about like a home refrigerator and a little bit of like lights turning on. But we run a commercial grocery store, so we pull a lot of power to do this. So we have created a system that is the most possible power we can be generating at this footprint for the size of our store. You know, Isla Vista is kind of, it's a special community, and we're the only community-owned, customer-owned grocery store anywhere in the county, practically on the Central Coast. And so for us to now also be the only solar-powered grocery store anywhere in this area, I think there might be one store only in Carpinteria that might have some solar. It's kind of a big deal. And so people are shopping here. Crowdfunding the panels was an important part, but also shopping at the co-op is a really important part for us to be able to keep projects like that going, because we're able to use the money from our grocery sales to then reinvest to more projects to create more awareness and more excitement around how we can actually do visioning projects like this for our store that impact the community. Support comes in a lot of ways. It wasn't just people digging into their pockets and giving out their money towards the panel crowdfund. if people didn't shop at the co-op and support us as an entity, we wouldn't even have a store to put the panels on. So we feel really grateful that we're seeing more people come into the store and embrace buying a higher quality food and embrace shopping at a food co-op, because that's what helps the panels keep getting supported.
Is there anything you would like to add?
You know, it's a unique project for a unique type of business. Revolve only works with nonprofits and cooperatives because these are the kinds of businesses and organizations that are actually creating on the ground change within communities for resilience, for economic democracy, to have a voice and to have a vote. You know, we vote with our fork every day when we decide what we're eating. When you support a place like a food co-op, you're not just voting with your fork about the food you're eating, you're voting about where you're buying it. And our business model, very similar to KCSB, is a people-powered community institution. It was started by students and college kids, students, high school students, college students, and community residents, so that Isla Vista would always have a community-owned entity with which to have a place to go shopping for food. And now that we're actually being able to kind of offset some of our utility expense through these panels, we're excited to see what more we can be doing in the community and in the co-op to make us more sustainable and even a better resource for people.
Kaylin, was a food co-op always the building in mind, or were there other candidates?
We've gone through a few candidates. Revolve programs solely benefit other nonprofits and cooperatives. So we had talked to a bike coalition downtown, but once we found out that the Ivy Food Co-op actually owned their building, they actually crowdfunded for that in 2013. So they now have an excellent history of successful crowdfunding campaigns. But they just seem like the perfect fit. They're so local, and they're already so committed to sustainability, and they just ended up being perfect. I just think one of the things that I'd like to add and focus on is how this project is really a testament for community empowerment and coming together for a bigger cause that's totally beyond ourselves, because every single donor has a positive impact on the environment locally, as well as the amount of fossil fuels and carbon emitted into the atmosphere. So it was really an impact bigger than ourselves, and I couldn't be more happy with the outcome.
All right, Kaylin, thank you for talking with me.
Of course.
That was Melissa, the general manager of the Ivy Food Co-op, and Kaylin, a fourth-year environmental studies major, which served as a solar ambassador and handled the crowdfunding that helped the food co-op go solar. One-third of their energy will now be provided by the sun. This is Inside Isla Vista on 91.9 FM KCSB. Tune in Wednesdays at 5 p.m. to find out what's happening inside Isla Vista and catch up on past episodes on SoundCloud.com. Just search KCSB FM. Next Wednesday on Inside Isla Vista, Lieutenant Mark Signa hosts and is joined by Santa Barbara County Undersheriff Barney Malekian. That's next Wednesday at 5 p.m. I'm Hector Sanchez-Castaneda. Thanks for joining us tonight. This is Inside Isla Vista on 91.9 FM KCSB. Our theme music is Siesta by Jazz.